What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 192. All right, so today I have an awesome guest for you. It's someone who I recently met and really connected with his story. And I think a big reason for that is that in a lot of ways, there's a lot of parallels to kind of my story and small town guy kind of grew up learning work ethic and ended up wanting to get out of that small town and then ultimately return back. And so just a ton of different parallels. Obviously, he took a lot of different turns than I did, but we did kind of go that parallel path. And so I always find it fascinating when, you know, you talk to small town people and they kind of want to get away and then they end up coming back and the journey that led them there. And so just a ton of value from him in his journey. Very educated guy, very successful now. And also, we'll talk a little bit about, let's say someone in his business lived on dog food for like a month. So if that doesn't interest you a little bit, I'm not sure what will. I mean, come on. So also too, before we dive in, we did just recently restock. In fact, we were up late restocking and everything's pretty much full right now. So if you've never tried Crosso Meats, if you've been curious about it, you've heard me talk about it, now is a great time to go there. Go to CrossoMeats.com, get you some meat. We've got summer sausage and jalapeno beef sticks and hamburger patties, a little bit of everything. So go to CrossoMeats.com. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. I'm super excited for my guest today. This is someone who learned the value of hard work at a very young age by working at his family's business, which sometimes meant spending holidays out doing deliveries while most kids were at home, and was also required to achieve the rank of Eagle Scout before he was allowed to get his driver's license. From there, he left a small town to pursue an education at Texas Tech, but even despite having a heavy workload at school, he found a job at a nearby feedlot to continue working while attending school. He always knew that returning to his family's business was an option, but pursued some other career paths in the meantime after graduating, which included a supermarket job and then ultimately a corporate job at ConAgra Foods, after realizing his calling to be back in his hometown to return to his family business. Now, as you all know, not all stories go exactly as planned. When he returned back to the business, after joining with his brother to buy out their parents, he was actually forced to fire his mom a week before Thanksgiving. Talk about an awkward meal. After that, he now has gone on to be a dominant entrepreneur in the freeze-dried pet food industry and manages numerous employees in a rapidly growing company. Super excited to welcome to the show, Chad Felderhoff. Again, Chad, thanks for coming on, man.
Man, Derek, what an intro. Like, that's pretty spot on. I think you covered it all. Why even have the podcast, right?
Hey, there's some good stories in each one of those things, though, right?
Man, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things, obviously we got a chance to meet each other a couple of weeks ago, but as yep. I kind of dove into your bio and everything else, there's actually so many kind of parallels to your journey and mine, kind of different ways of getting there, but small town, kind of, you know, the hard work ethic, here I am now kind of running our family's ranch. And, you know, again, we kind of got here different routes, different paths, but kind of similar. And so I guess just like starting off from the beginning, because one of the things that I love is when I hear how young kids are taught hard work. And I know a lot of times when you're going through it as a kid, it sucks. You hate it. You wonder why you're not out doing the other stuff the other kids are doing. But like, what was it like kind of growing up with the family business and maybe just start there?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, you've covered a lot on your family side of things. And I would say it's pretty close to the same, right? So yeah, growing up in the family business, it was, it had its challenges, right? So you're talking about like all my friends are going to the swimming pool, they're riding their bikes all day. Now, we had plenty of time to do all that kind of fun stuff, but hey, you're going to go make money, right? You're going to figure out how you're going to make money. Oh, you want this Lego set? Well, you got to go make money to get that Lego set. And so you learn the value of a dollar real quick. Oh, I got to do X and X to get this $10 Lego set, or I want these shoes, or I want, you know, this toy, this book, whatever. We always had that kind of that kind of instilled in us of you got to pay your own way. Well, then that just kind of, I don't know. We just put the logical pieces together, right? How do you get more money? You go do more work. And so, and really, I guess our parents are just the biggest example we have, right? So they're always working. They stay late. They, you know, bring work home, work, all that, you know, that whole dynamic has changed so much because I think a lot of people just don't value that work. Mm-hmm. Right. They don't value going and doing the work or seeing their parents do the work, or the parents maybe feel like they don't want to have to work as hard. Right. And so they're not setting that example for the kids. And so the kids, you know, it just goes a little, it's just this trickle down effect. Right.
What were you doing as a kid, like when you were working? Cause I don't think a lot of people yet at least kind of know the type of business that you're in, but this wasn't like you were just out kind of, I don't know, working at a coffee shop or something. No offense to any of you coffee shop workers, right? But like, it sounds like from my understanding, it was actually pretty physical, pretty hard labor.
Yeah. So we were throwing feed sacks. So we worked on the back of a feed stack line, right? So 50 pound sacks. So, or, you know, every once in a while you get lucky and it was a 30 pound sack, or when we couldn't lift it, we were making samples or we were testing grain at the grain elevator. Like harvest time comes in and you're running up and down on the back of a grain truck, probing the grain trucks. Right. So it was all outside. So I didn't have my first air conditioned job until after I graduated from college. Right. So my air conditioned job of running a grocery store, that was, everybody's like, well, how do you like it? I'm like, sweet. I got air conditioning in the summer in Texas. That's kind of a big deal. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was great for football practice. Right. So when I was in eighth grade, throwing a 50 pound sack, and if anybody goes out to, if you've ever seen a 50 pound pallet sack, right? Like I'm sure you've got plenty of them sitting around at the farm, but throwing it four high, that's really all I could ever get until I got to probably eighth grade. And then you're starting throwing 50 pound sacks over your head. And, you know, it's, you'd rotate every 40. And no, my dad is not a slave labor driver, you know, like that. It was just part of it. Right. And so, it was never, hey, you have to go work here. It's like, you can work here. And it was always something fun, right? As a kid, even as a young kid, we grew up climbing all over feed sacks in the warehouse and that type of stuff. So it somewhat made it fun too, right?
Was education pushed? Like, was that, because obviously I know you're very well educated now, but like when you were younger and kind of doing more of the manual stuff, did you always want to go to college, or was that always kind of the career path that you thought would be ahead of you?
Yeah. So education was big in our house. Like, you know, it was kind of one of those things. Dad never got a college education. He came right out of high school and went straight into the family business. And so he did some college associate degree work stuff, but it never was pushed that big. My mom has her master's. And so she was big on the education side of things. Right. And so it's very interesting that the way my parents grew up. My mom grew up farmer, really lower class, right? And not in a bad way, just, you know, earned everything she ever had. Dad grew up in a family business, maybe quote unquote the upper echelon of the middle class. And so mom was always pushing education. Dad did too, right? Dad was kind of like, no, you don't want to get stuck here like I did. So go get your education. And so education was always important. And then, yeah, I've always had that mindset of just one more, go one more, do something extra, right? That's how I ended up with my master's. It was like, no, I feel like I got to finish it. Like at some point I just got to get there. Right. So that's, education was a big part of it. And, you know, hey, we were all told in high school, you know, you don't want to be digging ditches, go get your college education. Right. I almost think it probably is now the opposite way. Hey, you can make a hell of a lot
You
more
beat me
money.
to it. You beat me to it. I was going to say, has that changed for you? Because I know it's changed for me. But yeah, college, back then, like it's not like we're that old, but back then in the old days, right? Like you almost had to go to college. But now, like I'm sitting here telling my kids, if you want to go, go, but don't go unless you know exactly what you're going for. If you feel like you need to go to college, then great. But don't go do that just because that's the next step.
No, I am a big advocate of, I think trade schools are super important, and at some point they're going to make a massive comeback because people can't afford college, and there's not as much good that comes out of college, right? So we don't have anybody that's quote unquote not college educated to work on equipment, right? There's just a lot of hands-on stuff, and that growing up in a feed mill is a lot like growing up on a ranch. You're working with your hands, like you're fixing motors, fixing elevator legs, running a scoop shovel. So it's very mechanically inclined, right? And so, yeah, I could work on my truck in college, right? Oh, I got to replace the radiator. Yeah, I'll do it. Like I can take it somewhere and it's $500, or I buy the radiator off of eBay and, look like the out on the blocks on the front of the house, but I'll get it up and running here shortly, right? So and now people just stop driving a car and it just sits on the side of the road. Like I don't have to fix it. I'll figure out how to get a different one, right? So
Yeah, it is. It's so interesting, kind of the way it has changed in that regard to where, again, like college used to be kind of the only ticket. Like I remember, I wouldn't say that it was necessarily like you have to go to college. It was like you want to go to college, so you're not doing what I'm doing, right? Like that was kind of like with my parents, because at that time, my mom was, she had waited tables. She did some construction work, and she's like since gone on now, she's doing awesome in real estate. But at that point, like that was kind of her path. Like my dad was on a ranch making literally no money. And it was like, even if you want to stay here, you can't because I can't pay you. It was like that you got to go do something else. But I remember thinking, and it was so interesting at my time, when I was at ClickFunnels for all those years, because ClickFunnels kind of promoted this culture, right, wrong, or indifferent, of like, instead of doing the gold mining, sell the picks and shovels, right? Like that was the big thing. It's like, you can go and gold mine and maybe you'll get rich or whatever, but the people who really made the money in the gold rush were the people selling the picks and shovels. And I think that there's definitely some truth to that. But at the end of the day, like somebody has to, in that analogy, somebody has to dig for the damn gold, or everybody selling the information, it doesn't matter, right? Like if there's no one there to actually mine for gold, then none of the other stuff that's feeding that ecosystem works. And that's where I almost feel like we're getting at in this like kind of college dynamic. It's like, yeah, we've got engineers, we've got software people, we've got all this stuff, but at the end of the day, like I can teach you how to go and do whatever, but if there's no one actually doing that thing, none of it works. You know what I mean? And that's what's been so fascinating to me with the whole education side of it. Like you said, at the end of the day, there does have to be somebody who can, if you're not digging the ditch, at least run the equipment to dig the ditch, right? Like, I mean, I can be an engineer and show you how to engineer the ditch and where it needs to go. But if there's no one to dig the damn ditch, then we're screwed.
No, it at the end of the day, I think you get paid for the calluses on your hands. Like you will. Like we've got a big organization, we've got a lot of machinery. Like trying to find an HVAC person is almost impossible, right? And these guys, you get electricians, HVAC, and any kind of mechanical guy, there's a high demand for that. Even truck drivers, like that one shocks the hell out of me. It's just driving down the road. Like you can make $120,000 being a truck driver, and not even in your own vehicle. All you got to be able to do is shift from first to 13th gear, right? Find the right gear and go 70 miles down the road. So it's crazy. And I think at some point that pendulum is going to swing, and we're going to be stuck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're either going to be in, it I hope that the way it goes is it creates massive opportunities, or we're just going to be screwed because, and I think, you know, at least here we feel it, which is like you said, it's so hard to get anything done, anything from construction to trade type work, you know, plumbing, electrical, like those guys are all the few of them that there are, they're all so busy that it's, you can't ever get anything done, but yet everyone's like, yeah, let's go get a gender studies degree. It's like, great. That's going to help the world. Right.
Yeah. Like we've put on a big program, like a part of a couple of chamber of commerces and programs of trying to get the work program, work release kids in school. Right. And so, hey, let's go get you an associate's in, you know, there's a couple of machine shops, right? So let's get you an associate's in a CNC degree, or let's get you an associate's in equine nutrition, like, and really try to get you into that expertise and really focus in, right? And so it proving to those kids, like, that's the tough thing, because society tells them, oh, you're just going to be a broke guy making 15 bucks an hour. And so everybody looks down on those guys, and I'm like, no, you, that's the backbone of the economy right there.
Yeah.
Like you are going to be the demanding force here, and we have to take care of you. Like we need these people. Like, and it's, they're not any less of a human being. That's what God put them on this earth to do. Right. Like we're all here for some reason. So we just got to be able to find that clarity and not run somebody down. Just because I'm not a doctor, that doesn't mean I'm worthless, right? Yeah. So,
well, we used to always joke about, you know, kind of some of the stuff that you got into. Because I ended up, you know, as everyone out there knows, I've talked about several times, not actually finishing college. And I remember the first time I made a lot of money, it was like, joke's on you, because you went to school for 8 years and I'm making more than you are right now. You know, like the first year I ever actually had like a really good financial year, it was like, yeah, I didn't have to go to all that schooling. So yeah, I'm not, like I said, if my kids want to go to college, great. But at the same time, if they tell me they don't, or they're, you know, maybe want to go do something else, they want to take a gap year and figure out their life, like, I wish I would have done that instead of going right into college. Because after I didn't play football, I really had no desire to be in college. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and just ended up wasting money basically. So, you know, So, when you, after you kind of got into the corporate world, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that, because I know, again, kind of what I've been able to see is that, and this is where I think I really had alignment with you too, is you got into the corporate job and you're making the money, but it seemed like it just wasn't maybe what you thought it would be. I mean, what was your experience when you finally kind of first, you know, you had the job, obviously you're getting married at that time, and you kind of were, you know, building what most people would think was a great life, right? Like climb that corporate ladder. What was that experience like for you?
You know, so I won't say anything super bad about it. I think it was good, right? Like it built, it helped mold some of the structure that you need in a business, right? And so I took it more as a learning opportunity. It was just a continuation of college and you know, how we handle situations. It's just another great teacher of, you get some experience, right? There's some experience out there. But yeah, no, it was good. You feel like you're doing the right thing, right? Like you get all the feels. You know, I remember the first bonus I got, right? And it was a big enough bonus to buy a pickup truck. And Dad's like, what? Man, that's awesome, you know? And so it's like, yeah, I felt good because I worked my butt off. But like, oh, man, there's another level out here. Like, coming from a small town, you and I both come from a small town, like a new pickup truck, whoever gets a new pickup truck, like that's kind of a big deal, right? Like, that sticks out in town when there's only 200 pickup trucks and you have the brand new red one, that kind of sticks out. It's a status symbol, right? And so it's like, yeah, no, I have gotten out of the small town, right? Like, to me, it was, how can I get out of here? How can I go somewhere else? Like, I got to move on, right? Like, the town is 1500 people, and it's been that way since the day I was born and moved out, right? So that corporate gave me that opportunity to do it, right? And you could come back and, oh, I moved, I did this, I've done this, I've run this plant, I've done that plant, you know. It just gave me a lot of an experience, right? And so you gain all that experience and you climb the ladder, because where I worked, if you wanted to move up, you had to move. So, you know, we had 13 addresses in 7 years in moving, right? And so met a lot of nice people, good people, made a lot of good friends all across the country throughout that, right? And you just kind of get to that point, and it's like you always know that, like, I guess I floated in this atmosphere where I didn't have, the guys above me weren't micromanagers, right? And I didn't necessarily micromanage people below me, but I was just kind of put on my own island, right? And able to do things. Well, then whenever I bumped up into the next level, that's when all of a sudden the micromanaging came in, and we started running into some of those problems. And so that's really where the corporate world just, I ran out of room to go in the corporate world, right? Like, it started turning political. You got to kiss everybody's ass. You got to do, you know, oh, well, you can't tell this person that. Well, no, that's what he did. Like, why can't I tell him he's stupid? Like, that was a dumb decision. Oh, well, that's just not good for your career. Well, I don't care whether it's good for my career.
I love that. I love it. That's like so much how I am too. I was doing consulting and kind of part of a company for a little while, and they gave me an award called the Radical Transparency Award, which I found hilarious, because I think it was their way of saying, like, I'm just very direct. But I was the same way. And I think maybe it is like a small town thing, or like, you know, when you see things that you feel like could be done better, it's not like, oh, I should just sit here and collect my little corporate check. It's like, no, I mean, I would want to know if someone thought things could be done better. And so, no, it's just so funny how that does work sometimes, though, in corporate, is that everyone just kind of seems to go along to get along. If you get to a certain level of business, it's good. You know, we don't need to do anything crazy. It's like, yeah, but this is wrong. Like, everyone knows it's wrong, and no one will say anything about it. And it's so, yeah. So, I mean, do you feel like then that, because, you know, and I've asked this question before, but I'm always intrigued to get different people's perspective, because I think it does tie into this. Like, do you feel like you were kind of born an entrepreneur, or do you feel like that's something that you, and I'm not talking about maybe the skill set that comes along with it, but more the mindset of being an entrepreneur, because most entrepreneurs, they don't like to be told what to do, right? Like, they're, you know, maybe very, very driven a lot of times. Like, there's definitely some attributes. Now, there's other skill sets that we all learn, I think, in leadership, but do you feel like you were always kind of that entrepreneurial mindset, or do you feel like that was something developed maybe over time?
Well, so that's a great question, because I think it's a multifaceted answer, right? So I think if you look at the characteristics of an entrepreneur, like, you're driven, I mean, you're just a driven individual. Like, sometimes you're smart, sometimes you're, you know, you find your niche, right? You can be funny, you can be all in on the operation side of things, or very tactical, right? So I don't know that I was born an entrepreneur, but I was given a lot of the attributes that entrepreneurs pursue, right? And it was probably grown up in that space and seeing what, hey, owning a business, and it was never a limiting belief that I couldn't own a business, right? And so I think as that happens and you start going down that path, yeah, you've got those traits, and then it's just, where do you lean in? And sometimes those entrepreneur traits, like, that gets the guys all the way to the corporate, to the CEO level, right? And so it's just that it's a little different path. I don't think that they're truly any less entrepreneur. They manage their way to the top of the corporate ladder, right?
More of an entrepreneur, right? Like what they call entrepreneur.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't think anybody out there is just born an entrepreneur. Like, maybe that's the plan. Maybe that's the ultimate plan, that you're gonna process and go down that road as an entrepreneur. But I think you're given those characteristics, and what you do with those characteristics, that's what makes you into that entrepreneur.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And I totally agree. I think there's one thing, because I've met entrepreneurs who are successful who I wouldn't say are super driven, right? Like and even though that would be, to me, that would be like, if I was going to build an entrepreneur, that would probably be the top thing. But there are some people who I don't feel like are super driven. But the one thing I feel like drives entrepreneurs to me, I'd love to get your insight on this. And I think that's why a lot of people I know who are very successful entrepreneurs, they kind of had somewhat similar paths or upbringings. They have this ability to figure it out, right? Like whatever situation. Like I remember we were doing this personality test, and we had this awesome person who would come in, and she was like a consultant, and she would give these, I forget there's so many different personality tests. I forget the one that she would use, but she was basically saying that, and it was like total agreement, which was most people who are entrepreneurs, if not all, they have like an uncanny ability to want to figure stuff out. So she was like, for an example, like we're all in this room right now. If someone came and locked all the doors, there's no doubt in my mind, we would get out of here, because it's a room full of entrepreneurs. Like people would figure it out. And that to me has been like one of the biggest things that I find so compelling or at least fascinating to me, is that ability of entrepreneurs to be like, I might not know the answer, but I'll figure it out. And then I think the people who aren't entrepreneurs are usually the ones that are like, just, I need somebody to tell me how to get out of this room. Yeah. You know, like, have you noticed that? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, no, I mean, problem solving is probably right there at the top of that list for entrepreneurs, right? So if you think about what an entrepreneur truly is it's somebody that's solving a problem, right? Like whatever it is, I don't know, butter in a small packet, meat in a box to your house, right? Or food in a bag for your dog, right? That's a problem that is being solved. And so I think that's what the entrepreneur is. And so I think most entrepreneurs, and you've had a ton of them on your show, right? But I bet they all have at some point, there's this, and this is why I say I don't think you're necessarily born an entrepreneur, but they all have this little instance somewhere where that just clicked for them, right? Like maybe not the problem solving, but they saw a problem, and then they saw an opportunity to like capture revenue off of that problem or truly really solve a problem that could help people, right? And so I think that's why I feel like maybe you're just not born an entrepreneur, because God just didn't put all these random thoughts in your head of being an entrepreneur. You're looking at something and you're like, hey, I can fix that. Wait a second, there's a business idea behind that, right? And there's people out there that are great problem solvers, but don't even want to try to put a business behind it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why, no offense to auto mechanics, but that's why you see auto mechanics move shops like 18 different times, right? Like they don't get the business side of it, the business sense. And usually the guy that runs a really good auto mechanic shop, he's a great people manager, but he probably can't work on your car.
Yeah.
Right. For sure. Like he's like, man, I gotta be able to get these mechanics here, and the mechanics are great at solving the problem, but it's just, I don't know. Like I said, I'd be curious. Do you think there's like a moment in time where that switch flipped in your head?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd have to think about it. I know that for me with my kids, one of my favorite things to tell them is to figure it out, right? It's like, we have a problem. This isn't working. That's not, figure it out. Because I feel like if you can teach them to be, like you said, problem solvers, if they can figure it out, because I think at least for me, I know like my natural inclination as a parent is to be like, yeah, let me help you. And I still feel like sometimes I do that too much, but so oftentimes also it's like, just figure it out. Okay. It's broken. Figure it out. You figure it out. You know, you're bored.
Yeah.
go figure something out to do. You know, like one of my favorite things to say to my kids is only dumb people get bored, right? Smart people figure something to do. So it's always like, just figure it out.
Yeah, no, in our household when growing up, and so we've instilled this into and really try to instill this into our culture here, is can't means you don't want to. Yeah. So we don't use can't. Like when the girls come up and say, I can't get this open, I said, well, I guess you don't want it bad enough, right? Like if you want to get it open, you're going to figure out a way to get the jelly jar open, right? Or you'll figure out, you'll just put honey on your sandwich or something like that, right? So yeah
I love that. So I want to get into because I kind of teased it in the intro, and I'm sure this is, I mean, I don't know like how this all panned out afterwards, but just kind of how it went when you made the decision to go back. You know, for us, it was the craziest thing that we've ever done when we made the decision to kind of come back, right? Come move back home, whatever. What was that process like for you? Was it drawn out? Was it like you felt it? Like how did that kind of the decision, I guess, first to move back? Like how did you get to that?
Yeah. So I had this master plan that I worked on for 60 days and we had it and it all went straight to the T. No. not at all.
For the first time ever, right?
Yeah. No, so I mean, look. We were in South Dakota, in Mitchell, South Dakota. Being from Texas, I thought it was kind of somewhat great. Had a Cabela's and a Walmart, and I had a pheasant hunting dog, and we hunted pheasants. And but the wife was also from Dallas, and she was pregnant, and we had a 1 year old, right? And so being away from family was tough, but. The opportunity kind of presented itself. My brother was back in the family business doing sales. We needed to do a bunch of production work. The operation did. I always felt like I was going to come back to the family business. The wife was not really on in when we first got married. She's like, no way, no how. We're not doing dog food. I don't want anything to do with it. Like, no. And so we were sitting there and it snowed on Easter, and I get it. You're fine with snow on Easter in Idaho, but like,
I'm really not. Honestly, I'm really not. just let's throw that out there. I'm really not.
Yeah. So you know, it was just kind of one of those culmination of everything coming together, right? They needed some help on the operations side. My brother was really struggling. You know, mom and dad had gotten really complacent, and maybe not complacent, but just. They were fine with where the business was performing, right? And so my brother, another driven guy, like, we want to get better, right? And so I got him chirping in my ear, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? The wife is kind of ready to go. And then I had some stuff happen at work and like, oh, we think we're going to move you again. And I'm like, guys, I've moved. I've shown that I'm a company man. No. Like, and so then, you know, it was like, okay, how do we get back south? I kind of explored some other opportunities to do something different as well. And then it was like, no, actually, we're going to go back to the family business, right? And so go back to the family business. And it was probably took us 30 days or so to kind of get it all sorted out, figured out, kind of that type of thing, right? And so, but once we made the decision, it was all in, pot committed, full steam ahead. And so came back to the family business and didn't have a great plan of transitioning mom and dad out or anything like that. It was just coming in and going to help. And there was always a promise of, oh, well, yeah, we'll get you guys shares or we'll figure something out. Right. And so, that was always just kind of promised, right? So Mitch and I did it for 3 years. We basically built the business and you know, we added second shift and then we went from 25 people to 50 people on staff, right? And kind of just continued to grow the business. And dad was walking away a little bit, but then mom was digging in her deals deeper and like we couldn't get, we couldn't make necessary improvements, right? And so then all of a sudden dad brings in some PE guys. He's like, hey boys, I found somebody that wants to buy the business. And we're like, okay, fine. And basically all they wanted was us, right? They had a couple other pet food plants and they wanted an ops guy and they wanted a sales guy and somebody that had some, you know, had a lot of experience, and we fit that model, right? And that's what Mitch and I got creative. We went to a friend of ours that was a land bank. He worked at a land bank, knew him in high school, went to college with him, all that kind of fun stuff. And we said, hey, you're an asset lender. Can we work a deal here? Can we take out a bunch of debt on the assets and buy mom and dad out? And so that was, then we bought mom and dad out because they didn't want to put any more money into the business. They wanted to keep taking the money and filling the bank. So that's really how we kind of made that transition and bought them out, right? And so,
was it a smooth transition? Like, were they happy that you bought them out? I mean, I know it got a little rougher after that, but like, you know, were they happy and grateful that you did it? And it wasn't maybe some private equity company coming in or public, you know, whatever. Were they happy it was you? Or
I think now they would answer that question differently. Like, so now I would think they would say that they were happy. At the time, you know, it didn't feel like they were happy. Like, because
why wouldn't they?
You know, I don't know. It's hard to really say because, you know, when we bought the business, we gave them a set of suitcases as kind of like a, hey, congratulations, right? On we bought the business. Now you can travel. Like, you don't have this hanging over your head. And they were more happy about those suitcases. They would tell people about those suitcases than, hey, our boys bought the business.
Really? Right?
Yeah. And so it's just, it was odd. Like, I kind of feel like they felt like they left some on the table. Mm. Right. And I think that's what made the whole transition a little tougher, is I think they always felt like they left something on the table. I don't think that they did, but that's how they looked at it, right? So they always looked at it as, well, if we're going to sell the business for this amount, why not just hold on to it for 5 more years and take that money to the bank, and then we sell it again, right? It's like, it doesn't always work that way,
yeah.
Right? So I think now they are happy that we bought the business, right? And so it's that time heals all wounds, right? And emotions get to running high, and yeah. But no, it was about as smooth as a gravel road.
Yeah. So I know everyone's going to be curious. So how'd it go down firing your mom? I mean, like what was that like? I couldn't imagine. It has to be a little hard, a little awkward.
Yeah, you know, it was, and it was really difficult, right? So dad handled the transition really well. So dad was like, he'd come in about 8 o'clock, 8:30, and 9 o'clock he was going to the coffee shop to hang out with the guys, and then he'd come back about 11 o'clock, get some feed, put it on the back of his pickup. Boys, I'm hungry. Let's go eat lunch. We go eat lunch, and he'd say, oh, man, I got to go work a couple of heifers this afternoon. I think I'm going to take off. You got it? Yeah. Mom just dug in deeper, right? And so it was like this. We were trying to get – our goal was, hey, we want you out in a year. Like, work yourself out in a year. Like, we want to give you the freedom to go, right? And so it was just – it was always a constant battle. We'd take something from mom, like whether it be going and getting the mail, like, hey, we're going to give that to so-and-so. They're going to go get the mail on a daily basis. And you're going away on a trip. There's nothing special about getting the mail, right? So you're going to be gone for the next 2 weeks. We're just going to start right then and there. And then she'd come back and she'd be like, why am I not getting the mail? Why is so-and-so getting the mail? Like, Mom, it's just the mail. Yeah, but I like to get out. Well, you can get out and go to Sonic and get a Diet Coke in the morning. Like, you don't have to change that routine because you're not getting the mail. And then it would just be like, I mean, we hired an accountant, and from a small town, this gal we went to high school with her, she'd been corporate trained, like CPA. She just wanted to live in town because she grew up there. She wanted her kids to grow up there. And great person, right? And we're like, Mom, we're hiring her to replace you. And that it was just like, what? No, she's a trained accountant, CPA. Like, this is gonna be awesome. Like, you like her, go to church together, like, you know her kids, all that fun stuff, right? And then Mom was just making it unbearable for her to work there. Like, you know, the old dot matrix printers,
Yeah.
like where you. So Mom printed out her financial records on those dot matrix printers, right? And so this gal came in, and you know, she's coming off of a corporate job, and she's like, I'll stay and do the books this evening. And so she like rips all the edges off and breaks all the paper down, right? And gets it to put it into a folder. Mom just absolutely lost it. It's like, oh my God, why did you do that? Mom made her tape them all back on there so they would fit in her binder.
Oh no.
Like, Mom, really? Like, and so it was just a lot of little stuff like that, right? And so it was just one of those things where it's just like, Mom, I'm tired of doing this like 17 different times, right? Like, for the mail. And every time Mom would just come and just be upset and be like, I'm just trying to help. And I get it, Mom, but we need to move you out. Like, we got to get out. And so, yeah, it just so happened that it was in November, and it was just like tension level high. And all right, Mom, this is it. The end of the year, you're out. Your office is no longer your office. Like, and you know, if you ask my mom, that I just took her heart out of her soul at that point. But it was it I felt bad. It was not fun, not anything I wanted to do. We tried and tried and tried to make it a transition. It's like telling the kid they can't have any more candy and they still have the candy bag and they keep grabbing candy out of it. At some point, you just got to take it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The you know, you want to own a business, right? Like, next thing
Yeah.
you know, you're firing your mom. Like, you know, Thanksgiving's awkward.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I know we're kind of getting closer to the end here, but
Yeah.
I gotta get you to share what your brother did for 30 days and kind of what I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this kind of really helped you guys go a little bit viral and everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was and I guess it was about 3 years ago now. But we were kind of trying to build out our online presence, and we were doing the freeze dried, and it was we were truly trying to truly build our brand. And he was gone on vacation, and he came back, and he's like, you know what? I'm gonna eat dog food for a month. I was like, dude, what? What? Why? And he's like, there's nobody else out there that's do it that has done it. They've all eaten dog food, but they haven't eaten it for 30 days straight. And so I was like, okay, just you, or are we both doing it, or how, what's going on here? Like, what is the plan behind it? And he's like, I don't know. I hadn't figured that out yet, but I'm gonna do it. And so it was just kind of one of those things. He started telling people in November, right? Or maybe it might have been the 1st of December. He started telling people, because we're both very competitive, and if we put it out in the world, like, man, I'm not gonna get called on it, right? We're gonna
Yeah.
do it. And so that was kind of his thing. And so we started out with a little bit of a plan, and we just did a 20-second video, or maybe a minute video, Facebook Live, that type of thing, and just leaned in. And probably by day 25 or so, maybe by day 20, like, all of a sudden it really just picked up steam, right? Because it's just that constant content creation. And it was perfect for content creation. And You know, our philosophy was the CEO of Purina or Mars is not going to eat dog food for 30 days. So like, that's just how we, that's how we can create this connection with the consumers. Right. And at that time, dog food, they were, a lot of the grain freeze were considering, or a lot of the grain free diets were causing heart problems, supposed heart problems in dogs. Right. And that dog food, it was kind of this, oh, dog food is bad for your dogs. And, you know, so we, that was also the play, the tie-in too. Right. And so, you know, it all happened in that January. It was January before COVID. Right. So it was like, people start new diets in January, I'm going to start dog food. Right. And so,
so what kind of dog food was he eating? What mix was it?
It was kibble and it was freeze dried. So it was all stuff that we make. So it wasn't off the shelf. It was all stuff that we made. Right. And so,
which is, he started liver, and like, what's the blend though?
Yeah. So he would eat like freeze dried beef liver. Some of the meatballs would be like, our, you know, their 50s and livers and hearts and kidneys and that type of stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And then like our kibble, that's chicken meal and chicken fat and ocean fish meal and, salmon oil and that type of stuff. Right. So just anything that we have on our website, he had it all. And so he gave his, we built a little Mitch's review on the kibble taste. Right. And so, we had that full gamut going. And so, you know, he lost 30 pounds in 30 days and, you know, his blood work came back amazing after it. And that was all kind of after the, that was towards the tail end of it, is like, hey, I'm down like 25 pounds. I think I can push it to get down 30 pounds in 30 days on dog food. And then we went, we sponsor a local non-kill shelter. And so then we had the big last meal at this no-kill shelter. And our goal was to get out to rescue or, you know, have people adopt 30 animals, which we accomplished. So we got, you know, lost 30 days of dog food, adopted 30 animals and lost 30 pounds. Right. So it was this great thing. And then it snowballed from there. And about middle of February, that's when COVID kind of hit full scale and it tripled our online business. And then COVID hit and tripled our online business again. So, because the content was out there.
Yeah. How cool. Yeah. How creative though, too. Like I love hearing stories like that. Right. Cause it's so out of the box. It's like, yeah, we can sit here and tell you how good our dog food is and how healthy it is, or we can just eat it. Right. Like what a good deal. Yeah. It's probably basically like a carnivore diet, which is what he was doing. So, I mean, that's not all that crazy anymore.
Yeah, no, it was crazy at the time. It's not anymore. And so that spun off into, now we have a Facebook show that is Man versus Dog Food. And we did that religiously for about a year and a half, 2 years. And now we do it kind of sporadically. And so it was just like any random ingredient that we are adding to the kibble, or we change the kibble up, we would bring it online and Facebook it and say, okay, hey, this is our new pumpkin spice meatball. Yeah, I could taste the pumpkin. Oh, there's a little nutmeg in there too, you know? So it's been a great, just kind of, that's what we're known for. And so when you go to the pet food expos and different things, like, still eating dog food? I'm like, yeah, I'll eat it. That's fine. Right. So it's a great kick.
It is, man. What like, very, very smart. Like, got to give credit. It's super good marketing. Good way to kind of get your brand out there and something that people remember. I mean, for sure. Yeah. I remember that from when you told it to us a couple of weeks ago. I was like, that's a cool story. Very cool. So just to kind of wrap it up here, before I get to the last question, where can people find you? If they want to check out the dog food, like where, you know, maybe follow what you guys got going on, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah. So you can find us on Facebook, right? So I'm Chad Felderhoff on Facebook. You can go on Instagram at Bark Brother. I'm not super active on Instagram, but our company Munster Milling is out there. You can go to munstermilling.com, And yeah, that's probably the best place to find the dog food. I need to get a Primal King coupon. So I'll do a
Yeah.
coupon Primal King and we'll get something going there.
Sweet.
So yeah, we'll
Yeah.
do Primal King as the coupon. So
There we go. There we go. No, that'd be great.
yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah, with for you guys out there, definitely check out the dog food that Chad and those guys are doing. Top of the line stuff. Top of the line ingredients. Obviously, if I mean most people out there, I don't think would eat their dog food that they feed their dogs for 30 days. So I mean that should
No,
tell you all you need to know.
it's yeah. I would not recommend eating it. I
Yeah.
think that I have to say that for legal reasons. So I would not recommend eating.
Not recommend it. But if you're going to eat dog food,
Yes.
yeah.
If it's a challenge that you want to do,
Yeah.
we're good.
That's awesome. That's cool. So obviously kind of the pillars of the podcast is liberation, kind of the mindset. We talked a lot about that, kind of what you went through, lifestyle, kind of how you're living now and the move and the transition and everything else. But the last one is legacy. And so, as you've kind of gone through all these different parts of your life, you've gotten out of where you're at, kind of running this bigger company now and obviously scaling that still. Maybe when the day does come and you look back, what do you feel like you would like to leave behind for your legacy?
Man, I've been thinking about this since you invited me onto the podcast. So I've gone and listened to some other ones, and this legacy question. I'm like, man, how am I going to answer that? Because Derek always brings the heat there. Like, and you've had great like answers to that question. It's kind of it's been on my mind, like in more ways than one. But my legacy is really gonna be about who I am, right? And who we are. And that really forms our legacy. And I'd like to say that my legacy is just, hey, a guy that really cared about people and trying to build those people up, right? So I love, like I said, I hire a lot of hourly guys, right? Kind of throwing feed sacks. And my big passion is to get those guys to the next level. And when we get them to that level, I want to get them to the next level, right? So my legacy is number one, a great dad. Like I want to be the great dad. I've got four beautiful daughters, and it means everything to me. Those girls are everything, right? And so I want to be that great dad, the great husband, and then I want to be a pillar in the community. Like he put the community over himself all the time, right? And whether that be hiring the people that nobody said they could hire, right? And getting that person to that place, or whether that be just being a giant volunteer in the community, right? And sponsoring stuff in the community and being there for the community, right? So to me, that's never being afraid to stand up for the community. So.
Love that. I love that. And I think it's something that unfortunately I feel like we're losing some of it, right? Just kind of that community advocacy and trying to stand up for the people where you live, right? Like if everyone kind of did that in their own little town, their own little community, the whole damn country changes. So absolutely love
Yeah.
it. Last thing, because you brought up your four daughters and I have three. What do you think about David Goggins saying he wouldn't care who dated his daughters?
He doesn't have any daughters.
Exactly,
Like,
right.
hey, I'll tell you this. The oldest one turned 11, and so I decided I was going to start training jujitsu because she had some little boy in her class that was training jujitsu, and I'm like, well, in 5 years, if he comes over, I want to have some mats in the shop, and hey, boy,
Yeah.
let's see what you got, right?
Let's go roll for a little bit. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that was so funny. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about at this event we were both at, David Goggins got a question about if you had a daughter and she was dating somebody, what type of standard or it was along those lines. He was like, "Oh, as long as she loves him." And I'm sitting there with three daughters being like, "Yeah, spoken like somebody who does not have a daughter, because I don't care if she loves him or not. If that guy's a dirtball, I'm gonna be all over it. That's just me though."
Yeah, no, I'm gonna try to help them hold the higher standards than that.
Yes, absolutely. Awesome. Well, Chad, this has been great. Make sure you guys go out there and check out Munster Milling. Check out the dog food there. Obviously, follow him on Instagram at Bark Brother. Check that out there. But again, just go there, use the website, get the dog food, whether you want a discount or not. I just want people to support you, Chad. So hopefully everybody goes and at least gives you guys a try, figures out maybe how they can get some food or maybe work with you at some capacity. I know we're looking at doing that here. So again, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, Derek. It's been a great time.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.